A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's been reading about Israel, apparently operating a forward base in the Iraqi desert during the Iran-Iraq war. Something discovered through open source satellite imagery. A runway, maybe some facilities. And it raises a bigger question. In an era where satellites blanket the planet, and AI can flag anomalies automatically, how would anyone build something like a C-Fizen-Scene or C-Fizen-C-Fizy-capable runway without the whole world noticing? He's asking for known examples. How militaries handle the visibility problem, whether they use subterfuge, the practical logistics of getting a runway and staging area up quickly, and what happens when you're done? Can you just tear it down? Or does operational security demand destruction in place?
This sits right at the intersection of logistics, satellite reconnaissance, and pure operational creativity. Back in late May, the Times of Israel reported that during the Iran-Iraq war, Israel built a secret forward operating base inside Iraqi territory. The base was uncovered by a research group called Shepard using open-source satellite imagery, and the facility sits in a remote stretch of desert in western Iraq near the Syrian border.
Shepard, being an Israeli intelligence analysis firm, yes?
The base is designated Site 512 in their report. It's got a paved runway roughly 2,200 meters long, long enough for a C-130, borderline for a C-17 depending on load and conditions. The satellite images show hangar foundations, perimeter fencing, and the really telling detail, blast walls and revetments around aircraft parking areas. That's not a civilian airstrip someone forgot about.
A 2-kilometer paved runway in the middle of nowhere with blast walls. The architectural equivalent of nothing to see here.
The timeline is what makes this so interesting. They've dated the construction to the early 1980s, which lines up with Operation Opera, the Israeli strike on Iraq's Osrak nuclear reactor in 1981, and with the broader Iran-Iraq war context where Israel was reportedly providing support to Iran. Israeli F-4 Phantoms and C-130 transports could have operated from this location, and the base sits roughly 100 kilometers from the Iranian border.
They built an entire airbase in someone else's desert during a war, and nobody noticed for 40 years. That's either extraordinarily impressive operational security, or a testament to how much the satellite landscape has changed.
In the early 80s, satellite imagery was dominated by a handful of government actors. Commercial satellite imagery as we know it didn't exist. You had Landsat doing 30-meter resolution, enough to see a runway exists, but not enough to understand what's happening on it. Today, commercial providers like Maxar and Planet Labs deliver 30-centimeter resolution, daily revisits, and AI models that can detect construction patterns and vehicle tracks.
Is the era of the secret forward base over?
Not over, transformed. The U.S. military operates what it calls lily pads, small, austere forward bases that can be activated quickly. During the campaign against ISIS, the U.S. used Firebase Bell in Syria, which started as a patch of dirt and evolved into a functioning outpost. The French have operated from places like Madama in northern Niger. But the most instructive recent example might be the Russian approach in Libya, where satellite imagery has tracked the expansion of facilities at Al-Qadim Air Base. They've been lengthening runways and building hardened shelters. They're not hiding it. They're doing it in places where the political cost of exposure is low.
That's a key distinction. Visibility matters differently depending on who's looking and what they can do about it.
A forward base in the Iraqi desert in 1982 was hidden because the sensor network was sparse. A forward base in Libya in 2024 is visible to every analyst with a Maxar subscription, but the Russians calculated that the diplomatic blowback wouldn't stop them. The visibility problem is as much political as technical.
Which brings us to subterfuge. If you can't hide the base, can you at least disguise what it is?
The classic move is the dual-use facility. During the Cold War, the Soviets built agricultural airstrips across Eastern Europe, ostensibly for crop dusting, but the runways were long enough, straight enough, and reinforced enough for military transports. the Swedish Air Force developed the BAS 90 system, where highways are designed with widened sections and removable barriers so fighter jets can operate from them. Taiwan does something very similar.
The highway-to-runway concept, the Bunnell made lethal.
A highway doesn't flag on satellite analysis because highways are everywhere. But there's another layer. If you want to hide an airstrip, you don't just disguise the concrete, you disguise the behavior. No regular flight patterns. No visible aircraft parking. You bring planes in at night, you disperse them during the day. At Site 512, the aircraft parking areas are dispersed and revetted, which is both a protective measure and a concealment measure. From above, if there are no planes visible and the runway looks like an abandoned road project, it doesn't trigger the same scrutiny.
Abandoned road project. A 2 kilometer stretch of pavement with blast walls that just happens to be perfectly straight and level.
You'd be surprised how much of the world's infrastructure looks weird from above. The challenge isn't finding anomalies, it's filtering them. There are abandoned airstrips all over North Africa and the Middle East from World War II. There are mining roads, oil exploration tracks, failed development projects. The AI flagging problem is real, but the false positive rate is enormous. You can hide a base in the noise if you're clever about it. A smart military makes the needle look like more haystack. The US and others have developed multispectral camouflage that doesn't just hide things visually, it reduces the thermal signature and even the radar return. Drape that over your fuel storage and the satellite sees what looks like a slight variation in desert texture.
Like putting a doily on your secret war infrastructure.
The world's most consequential doily.
Let me pull us to the actual logistics. You've decided you need a forward operating base. You found a remote patch of desert. How do you get from empty sand to a functioning runway with a staging area? And how do you keep everyone alive while you're doing it?
This is an engineering problem disguised as a military one. Step 1 is a site survey and initial entry. You insert a small team, special forces, combat engineers, sometimes contractors, to assess soil composition, drainage, and flatness. You can do some of this remotely with satellite data, but you really need boots on the ground to know if the soil can support a C-130. Desert sand can look firm and then crumble under heavy load.
Literally poking the ground with sticks before you commit millions of dollars of aircraft to landing there.
Poking with ground-penetrating radar and soil penetrometers, but yes. Once the site is validated, you bring in expeditionary airfield construction capability. The U.S. Air Force's RED horse units and the Navy Seabees specialize in exactly this. They can deploy AM2 matting, interlocking metal panels laid over graded soil to create an instant runway. A team of a couple hundred engineers can lay down 1,000 meters of matting in under 72 hours.
72 hours from bare dirt to C-130 landings. That's faster than most airport renovation projects.
That's with matting. If you want a paved surface, which Site 512 appears to have, the timeline stretches. You need aggregate, cement, water. Water is the killer in desert operations, and curing time. A paved runway in a remote desert might take 2 to 3 weeks with a dedicated engineering battalion, assuming you've pre-positioned materials or have a reliable supply line. The C-17 and C-130 are both designed for austere field landings. A C-17 can land on a dirt strip as short as 1,000 meters if properly prepared. The paved runway at Site 512 is over 2,000 meters, which suggests they wanted margin for heavier loads or wet conditions.
While all this construction is happening, you've got personnel on the ground who need security, food, water, medical support. How does that work before the runway is even operational?
The construction team is also the security team, at least initially. You insert with enough force protection to establish a perimeter, typically a company-sized element, maybe 150 to 200 personnel, and you set up a hasty defense, berms, concertina wire, observation posts. The first thing that lands isn't a plane, it's usually a helicopter bringing in the advance party. Then you start bringing in supplies by airdrop or helicopter sling load while the runway is being built. You're burning through water and fuel at an enormous rate, and every resupply is an operational risk.
You're building the thing that will save you while exposed to exactly the threat. The thing is meant to mitigate.
The military calls this the vulnerability window, the most dangerous phase of any forward-basing operation. The Israelis at Site 512 would have faced this acutely. Inside Iraqi territory, 100 kilometers from the Iranian border, surrounded by a country they're technically at war with. The base's survival during construction would have depended on secrecy, speed, and probably a very tense defensive posture.
Which leads naturally to the final question. What happens when you're done? Do you just leave? Or is there a point where you have to destroy everything in place?
There are basically four options. Option 1, handover to a local ally. The US did this with several bases in Iraq and Afghanistan. The problem is the ally may not maintain it, or worse, it gets captured. Option 2, abandonment. You just leave. This leaves behind sensitive site exploitation, opportunities for your adversaries. Option 3, dismantlement and removal. Expensive, time-consuming, and rare. Option 4, destruction in place. And this is more common than people realize, especially for bases that were never officially acknowledged. If the base was covert, and Site 512 certainly qualifies, you can't just hand it over or abandon it. The runway itself is a statement. Leaving that intact is an intelligence gift and a propaganda liability.
What does destruction in place actually look like for a runway? You can't just set it on fire.
Concrete doesn't burn, but it does crater. The standard approach is to use explosive charges to create regularly spaced craters along the runway's length, making it unusable until repaired. Combat engineers have cratering kits, pre-calculated charges designed for maximum disruption with minimum explosive. You can also use bulldozers with ripper attachments that tear longitudinal gouges. For supporting infrastructure, fuel bladders, generators, communications equipment, those get thermited or demo-charged. The goal is to leave nothing operationally useful. And for something like Site 512, there's an additional consideration, evidence of who built it. The Israelis would have wanted to remove or destroy anything with Hebrew markings, anything that could be forensically traced. Spent shell casings, ration packaging, medical waste, all of it has intelligence value.
This connects back to something you mentioned earlier about the base being discovered 40 years later. If they destroyed it in place, would it still be visible?
Cratered runways are extremely visible from the air, often more visible than intact runways because the craters create shadows and texture that catch the eye. Destruction in place denies the functionality, not the visibility. Site 512 appears to have been abandoned rather than systematically destroyed, which suggests either a rapid withdrawal where they didn't have time, or a calculation that the remote location made destruction unnecessary. Or someone planned to come back and never did.
Let me pull on a thread that's been running through this whole discussion. There's an underlying assumption in the prompt that AI and persistent satellite coverage make covert basing impossible. I'm not sure that's entirely true.
I think the AI makes everything visible. Narrative is overstated. Yes, the imagery exists. Yes, algorithms can flag changes over time. But first, the data volume problem. Planet Labs alone collects something like 3 million square kilometers of imagery per day. Processing all of that with change detection algorithms is computationally enormous, and the false positive rate is massive. Every new road, every construction site, every flash flood gets flagged. Human analysts still have to review everything. The bottleneck isn't collection, it's analysis. Always has been. Second factor, denial and deception still work. The Russians have become extremely good at this in Ukraine. They use decoys, camouflage, dispersal. A decoy airbase with inflatable aircraft and fake radar signatures can absorb satellite tasking and analyst attention while the real base operates somewhere else.
The pool toys of strategic deception.
They're quite sophisticated now. Both the US and Russia have decoy systems that replicate not just the visual appearance, but the infrared and radar signatures of real aircraft. From a satellite, it's extremely difficult to distinguish a high-quality decoy from the real thing. And if you task your limited satellite collection time on a decoy, you've just missed the real base for another day.
The counter to ubiquitous surveillance isn't invisibility, it's noise. Make enough decoys, generate enough false positives, and the real thing gets lost in the clutter.
There's a third factor that's the most important, political will. Even when you see something, you have to decide to act on it. If a satellite analyst spots what looks like a covert Israeli base in the Iraqi desert, that information has to go up the chain, get verified, get declassified, and then someone has to decide what to do. The Iraqis might not want to acknowledge it because it makes them look weak. The Americans might not want to publicize it because it complicates their relationships. The Iranians might not want to draw attention to it because it reveals they knew about Israeli operations and didn't stop them. Most of the time, that conversation ends with the information being quietly filed away. The Shepherd report on Site 512 is interesting precisely because someone decided to go public. That's the exception, not the rule.
Let me bring this back to the practical question. If a military today wanted to establish a forward operating base without the world noticing, what's the playbook?
The modern playbook has several layers. Layer 1, site selection. You pick somewhere that already has ambiguous infrastructure, an abandoned oil facility, a disused mining camp. The Sahel is full of these. You don't build new, you co-opt existing. Layer 2, incrementalism. You don't show up with a battalion of engineers and start paving. You send in a small team. They clear the strip. A month later, a C-130 lands once at night, then nothing for weeks, then another flight. You build a pattern that's indistinguishable from the background noise of humanitarian flights, smuggling, and local aviation.
The slow boil approach. By the time anyone notices a pattern, the base is already operational.
The pattern is the thing AI is worst at detecting. Machine learning is good at spotting objects and changes in terrain. It's terrible at understanding intent from sparse, intermittent activity. Layer 3, cover story. You need a plausible reason for people to be there. A geological survey, a counter-poaching outpost, a weather station. The cover doesn't have to be perfect. It just has to be good enough to give political actors an excuse not to escalate. Layer 4, redundancy and dispersal. You don't build one base, you prepare 3 or 4 sites and rotate between them. Any single site looks like occasional activity. The operational tempo is maintained across the network. This is basically the Swedish BAS 90 concept applied to expeditionary operations.
The answer to, can you hide a forward base in the age of AI, is yes, but it requires a level of patience and operational discipline that most militaries don't have.
That's the real constraint. It's not the technology, it's the organizational culture. Building a covert base slowly and incrementally requires you to accept that for weeks or months, you have limited operational capability. Most commanders want the base operational yesterday. The tension between speed and stealth is the fundamental trade-off in forward basing, which explains why Site 512 was discovered at all. They built it fast, during a war, and the physical evidence was substantial enough to survive 40 years of satellite improvement.
Let's talk about the C-130 and C-17 specifically, because the prompt mentioned them. What makes an airframe suitable for forward basing?
The C-130 Hercules is the gold standard. High wing configuration keeps the engines away from debris. The landing gear is incredibly robust. It can handle semi-prepared surfaces that would destroy a commercial jet's undercarriage. It can operate from dirt, gravel, packed sand, even ice. Minimum runway length at typical tactical loads is about 900 meters, and that can be a dirt strip. The C-17 Globemaster is a different beast. It's much larger, about 77 tons versus the C-130's 20, and designed for semi-prepared runway operations. It can land on surfaces that aren't paved but have been graded and compacted. It has a clever feature where the landing gear can be partially deflated to spread the weight, and thrust reversers that can be deployed in flight for very steep descents. But it's less forgiving. The runway needs to be wider, longer. Typically a minimum of 1,000 meters for tactical operations, more like 1,500 with a safety margin, and the surface has to be better prepared.
If you're building a covert base for C-117 operations, you're committing to a much more substantial engineering effort. More time, more personnel, more visibility. Which is why most covert forward bases are built for C-130s or smaller aircraft.
If you need C-17 capacity, you're probably in a situation where the operational requirement is so urgent that you're willing to accept the visibility risk. Or you're operating somewhere so remote that visibility doesn't matter.
The prompt asked about the Iran-Iraq war context specifically. Do we know anything about how Site 512 was actually used?
The details are still emerging, and a lot is inference from satellite imagery and historical context. The base sits in western Iraq, roughly 100 kilometers from the Iranian border. During the Iran-Iraq war, Israel was providing support to Iran. This was when Israel saw Saddam Hussein's Iraq as the primary existential threat. The base would have allowed Israeli transport aircraft to move supplies, possibly weapons, to Iran without having to overfly hostile airspace for extended periods. The satellite imagery shows aircraft parking revetments sized for fighter-sized aircraft, not just transports. The F-4 Phantom was a mainstay of the Israeli Air Force at the time, and it has the range to operate from a forward base in western Iraq into Iranian airspace. The theory is that Israeli F-4s might have used Site 512 as a staging point. But this is speculative. The imagery shows the infrastructure was there, not necessarily that it was used.
Which is the eternal problem with satellite intelligence. You can see the parking lot, but not the cars. You see capability, not activity.
That's another reason covert basing still works. The satellite shows you a runway exists. It doesn't show you the flight logs.
Let me ask you something that's been nagging at me. The prompt mentions quickly paving a runway. How quick is quick, really? You mentioned 72 hours for matting, weeks for paving. But what's the record?
During Operation Desert Storm, the Air Force deployed Harvest Falcon equipment sets, prepackaged airbase construction kits, and could establish a fully operational airbase in under a week. But that's with thousands of personnel, massive logistical support, and no attempt at concealment. For a covert operation like Site 512, the timeline is probably 2 to 3 weeks for a paved runway, assuming you've pre-positioned materials or have a reliable covert supply chain. And the paving itself. Runway pavement has to handle much higher point loads than a highway. Military engineers use a mixed design with higher compressive strength, often with fiber reinforcement. In a covert context, you might actually use a lower grade surface and accept the degradation, because a perfect military grade runway is a dead giveaway in satellite imagery. The military calls it signature management.
You built it slightly wrong on purpose. The architectural equivalent of a typo.
Korn, what about the human element? You've got pilots, ground crew, security forces, possibly intelligence personnel living in a remote desert base inside hostile territory. The psychological strain must be enormous. The physical strain. Desert operations are brutal. Daytime temperatures in western Iraq in summer can exceed 50 degrees Celsius. Sand infiltrates everything. Engines, weapons, food, sleeping quarters. Water consumption is enormous, 10 to 15 liters per person per day, just for drinking and basic hygiene, not counting construction needs. Every liter has to be flown or trucked in, which means every liter is a potential security breach. The logistics of keeping people alive are themselves a visibility risk. Some forward bases have experimented with on-site water production, atmospheric water generators, deep wells if the geology allows, but in the desert, you're often entirely dependent on resupply. Flying in water is extraordinarily expensive in fuel terms, but it's also the most secure method.
The desert as a thirsty, hungry, fuel-burning machine that doesn't care about your operational security.
That brings up medical evacuation. If someone gets seriously injured or sick at a covert forward base, you have a crisis. You can't just call for a medevac helicopter without potentially compromising the location. You either treat them in place with whatever medical capability you've brought, or you accept the operational risk of an evacuation flight. So you need a doctor, medical supplies, possibly a surgical capability, all of which adds to the footprint. And the footprint is the thing you're trying to minimize. It's a brutal trade-off between operational capability and signature.
Let me shift gears slightly. The prompt mentions AI flagging anomalies automatically. Are there specific examples of militaries using AI to find hidden bases that have actually worked?
The most prominent example is the U.S. military's Project Maven, which started as an effort to use machine learning to analyze drone footage and has expanded into broader imagery analysis. But Project Maven is mostly used in contexts where the U.S. already has overwhelming intelligence coverage and is looking for tactical changes, not for discovering unknown bases. Finding a new base from scratch across the entire planet's surface is a much harder problem. A paper from the Center for Strategic and International Studies estimated that if you wanted to do daily change detection across all of North Africa and the Middle East at commercial satellite resolution, you'd need something like 50,000 human analysts working full-time, or an AI system with a false positive rate low enough that the human review burden was manageable. We're not there yet. And even if we were, the countermeasures evolve. Camouflage gets better, decoys get more sophisticated, activity patterns get more ambiguous. It's an arms race. Right now, the ability to hide is slightly ahead of the ability to find, at least for actors who are sophisticated and patient.
The patient actor advantage. The sloth strategy, if you will.
I was wondering when you'd work that in.
I've been waiting for the right moment. Patience is kind of my thing.
Let me circle back to the destruction question. There's a dimension we haven't explored, remote deactivation. A modern forward base isn't just concrete and fuel bladders, it's networked, sensors, communications relays, possibly automated systems. If you have to leave in a hurry, you can't always crater the runway and thermite the generators. But you can remotely wipe the servers, disable the communications gear, and in some cases trigger pre-placed demolition charges. The US military has been experimenting with assured destruction systems. Everything at the base is wired with small charges or has a self-destruct capability built in. You push a button, or the system detects an intrusion, and the sensitive equipment destroys itself.
The military Internet of Things, but everything is a bomb.
A reductive but not inaccurate description. The point is that destruction in place doesn't have to mean a team of engineers spending a day placing charges. It can be built into the infrastructure from the start. For a covert base like Site 512, where you might need to evacuate on very short notice, that's a significant operational advantage.
Let me ask you a forward-looking question. Based on everything we've discussed, is the era of the secret base over?
I think the era of the permanent secret base is over. If you build something substantial and leave it in place for years, it will eventually be found. The satellite coverage is too dense, the commercial analysis firms are too capable, and the archive of historical imagery means that even if you're not caught in real time, someone will eventually go back and find you. Site 512 is the perfect example. It took 40 years, but it was found.
The era of the temporary, ambiguous, deniable forward operating location is very much alive.
The modern approach isn't to build a base and hope nobody notices. It's to build something that, when noticed, doesn't clearly look like a military base, or looks like it could belong to any number of actors, or sits in a political context where the discovery doesn't matter. The base becomes a Rorschach test. Everyone sees what they're politically incentivized to see.
The forward operating base as geopolitical ink blot.
The ink blot works because nobody wants to be the one who cries wolf about a weather station that turns out to actually be a weather station. The ambiguity is the protection.
To synthesize this, if you're a military planner today, you don't try to be invisible. You try to be unremarkable. You build things that could be anything. In places where nobody cares enough to look closely, and you accept that eventually someone will figure it out, but you've already moved on by then.
That's the playbook. And I'd add one more element: you build in the assumption of discovery. Every forward base should be designed with the knowledge that it will eventually be seen, analyzed, and possibly targeted. That means dispersal, redundancy, rapid teardown capability, and a political strategy for managing the revelation when it comes.
The base as ephemeral architecture, designed not for permanence but for a specific operational window, with its own obsolescence built in from day one.
Which is a fascinating architectural philosophy. Most human construction is about permanence, monuments, cities, infrastructure meant to last generations. Military forward basing in the satellite era is the opposite, architecture that aspires to be temporary, deniable, forgettable.
The architectural equivalent of a pop-up shop, but with surface-to-air missiles.
I think that's the title of the episode right there.
It does have a certain ring to it.
Let me add one more layer, the legal dimension. Building a military base on another country's territory without permission is a violation of sovereignty under international law. But it happens constantly, and the legal framework is surprisingly fuzzy. If the host country doesn't protest, or can't protest because they don't control the territory, or protests quietly but doesn't escalate, the base exists in a gray zone. Iraq has reportedly asked the U.S. about Site 542, but there's been no formal complaint to the UN, no escalation. It's an open secret that everyone is handling with diplomatic tongs. The legal ambiguity is a feature, not a bug. It gives everyone political cover. A base that's technically visible on satellite imagery, but politically invisible because nobody wants to talk about it, is effectively still covert.
The open secret is operational security strategy. I think that's a good place to land this. The short answer to the prompt is, yes, forward operating bases are still possible in the age of ubiquitous satellite surveillance and AI analysis, but the techniques have evolved from physical concealment to ambiguity, incrementalism, and political management. The physical act of building a runway in the desert hasn't changed much. You still need engineers, concrete, water, and time. But the art is in making the runway look like something else, or nothing at all, or something nobody wants to admit they've seen.
For the specific case that inspired all this, Site 512 in western Iraq. It's a reminder that even in an earlier era of less comprehensive surveillance, the remnants of covert operations can survive for decades before the right analyst with the right imagery puts the pieces together. The base was hidden in plain sight, in one of the most scrutinized regions on Earth for 40 years. That's either reassuring or terrifying, depending on which side of the operation you're on.
And now, Hilbert's Daily Fun Fact.
The reddish-orange dye used in traditional Mauritian textiles was historically extracted from the dried bodies of a scale insect called the cochineal, not the famous American cochineal, but a local Indian Ocean variety that feeds on specific cactus species introduced to Mauritius in the 18th century. The word cochineal itself comes from the Latin cochinus, meaning scarlet-colored, via Spanish, and has no etymological connection to the word cochineal, used in early English to describe a type of snail. That's a completely separate word that just happened to converge phonetically.
A dye bug with a linguistic doppelganger.
Etymological convergent evolution.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Our producer is Hilbert Flumingtop. You can find every episode at myweirdprompts.com. And if you enjoy the show, leave us a review wherever you listen. It genuinely helps. I'm Korn.
I'm Herman Poppleberry. We'll be back next week.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.